It's Saturday morning. It's 10 o'clock. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And we are in the studio as usual on this beautiful but somewhat chilly Saturday morning, and joined by my very, very famous soccer-playing grandson. He's smiling at that, who has a game afterwards. So he usually doesn't talk much during the show, but one of these days we'll coerce him.
Yeah, he's a pretty good investor, though.
Yeah, that part's true.
Yeah.
He won the big prize a couple of years ago.
He did. Highest increase in any single account under management.
And then he pulled the ultimate mistake. He sold it for a profit, right?
No. It was actually the ARC funds that had such a terrible, were probably the worst performing ETFs last year or the year before. And so he actually captured a good profit on it.
I always figure if somebody sells something like that at a profit, they made a mistake.
No.
Most people hold it until they don't have to pay taxes, meaning it was at or below purchase price.
It actually worked out pretty well for him.
Well, that's wonderful, since he's of the age where he's going to be needing a lot of money pretty soon.
Yeah.
Go to college.
College isn't cheap.
And driving first and then college.
Mm-hmm.
Well, anyway, those of you who are regulars, thanks for always being here. And if you're new to the show, if you left your radio on or somebody told you about it or we ran into you or something like that, try to stick around for the whole hour. We will promise you little in life, but we'll promise you this. You will learn something. And if anybody ever proves that wrong, then they're going to have to bring it up on air and tell everybody why. How about that? So the challenge is out there. It might not be worth much, but it'll be worth something. It's always entertaining. As I like to say, I can't think of a topic that affects more people than your own money. So everybody ought to listen to the show. You get a lot of misinformation day to day, week to week, from lots of different sources. We'll try to always tell you what's actually going on. And there has been a lot actually going on. It was one of those sort of crazy weeks that had a lot of ups and downs. It didn't wind up being anything too significant, which in itself, I believe, is good news. And I'll let Adam take up on that. I haven't asked him if he agrees with me.
I'm not sure. Maybe is the answer.
He's equivocating.
Much like this week, I'm equivocating, because this week I went to go prepare for the show, and I was kind of dreading looking at the numbers, but you know, they weren't that bad.
No,
it was actually a split week with the NASDAQ actually moving higher, which I did not expect, and then both the Dow and the S&P were off by less than 0.3%, and that means that our current rally remains intact for this year, at least on a short-term basis. That the charts really didn't get damaged at all this week.
Yep.
Things still look pretty good. The NASDAQ, even with the sort of barely up sideways movement, it's actually moving towards a golden cross, and it could really get there with some buying in the next week or two. So pretty interesting time, considering that really none of the news this week was good from a taming inflation standpoint. The ironic part is that the news was actually good, but the investors were hoping for bad news. So it was one of those weeks where it really could have gone the other way. Things could have been pretty bad, because the retail sales report came in super hot, as did the CPI report. And that's not what the market was looking for right now. To date, February has been somewhat of a consolidation month. It's allowed the overbought levels we saw in January to come back down. And it's a pretty healthy move for the market, as long as that short-term uptrend remains intact, which it has so far. The biggest losers on the week were oil and natural gas, along with the energy sector. Natural gas continues to plummet, lost another 11.7% this week. That brings the drop this year to 45%. Ouch. That's what a warmer-than-expected winter will do for you, I guess. Oil gave up 4.1% this week and is now down a pretty modest 4.4% this year. Energy company prices responded to these drops by dropping 6.3% during the week. So energy was the big loser during the week from a from a sector standpoint. Consumer discretionary, on the other hand, is the biggest winner this year, gaining 1.6% to the week. It adds to its 16.6% gains for the year. Pretty strong. So
it's not recession oriented, is it?
Yeah, that is a cyclical that does very poorly during recessions and does very well during economic booms. So it was off substantially last year. So this could just be a sort of reversion to the mean, but seeing it up 16.6% this year is definitely not a recessionary signal. Utilities were up over 1% as well, although they're down 2.9% this year. That's more of a defensive sector. So when those two move in tandem, that's a bit odd.
Yeah.
That's not the, that's normally
the case.
That's a
confused market.
Definitely. International markets continue their strong start to 2023, with Mexico leading the way higher. Mexico was up another 4% this week to bring the annual gains to 18.4% in under 2 months.
Go
what
figure.
Is driving that? I have no idea.
Maybe fentanyl sales.
No clue. France also added 3.1%. Spain and Brazil were up over 2%. Germany, Italy, and the UK all added more than 1% as well. France, Spain, Germany, and Italy are all up over 13% this year as the European rally continues on. China and Hong Kong were the biggest losers during the week, both dropping around 2.5%. Hong Kong is now negative on the year, while China has a modest 5% gain. Again, not an area of the world that I'm really excited about right now. Too much uncertainty in the China-Hong Kong region. As interest rates moved up during the week, bond prices fell accordingly. On the 10-year, the yield started the week under 3.7, ended over 3.8. AGG and BND, two ETFs that track the total bond market, were off about 45 basis points. Prices are still up across the bond market this year, despite the 10-year yield being higher today than it was on January 1st, so a bit of a disconnect there. For the first time this week, I was able to buy a couple of short-term treasuries with yields to maturity over 5% for clients.
6 months especially?
Yeah, well, actually, no. I was seeing it more on the 9 to 12
really?
Month range. Yeah, so that was odd.
On
that
the
was,
yield curve, the
yeah,
5% looks like
right.
your best deal would be at 6.
But in the market, it was really around that 9 to 10 month, end of this year, beginning of next year, maturities that were coming in over 5.
I like that better.
Yeah, me too. So that's good news for everybody. We've seen interest rates just skyrocket in the last year, and especially on short-term notes, and having a risk-free rate of 5%, it really makes investing a bit tougher, because if you're guaranteed 5% over the next 6 to 12 months, finding a stock that you feel very sure is going to beat that is a lot harder than when your interest rate was 1%.
Well, and the risk is you can't really compare it.
When you're
looking at a risk-free 5 or a risky whatever,
yeah,
then you have to be in it for the risk, or you're just going to sit back in the money market.
And needless to say, our percentage of bonds that we're holding in the portfolio has gone up tremendously over the last year.
Yeah.
Well, really over the last 6 months even.
Yeah, and it's going to go up a little further, I think, because I'm getting in. And when I move money, man, the market moves.
Uh-oh. Look out.
You don't
if you're
really
a bond investor,
that,
they're about to crash.
We'll take a quick break. Be right back. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And the lines are open, 904-222-8255. Trivia question this week, as usual, brought to you by Ken Bales at First Coast Alarm. You can reach Ken at 636-7888. Right here in the 904. All right. We're going to talk about big government today a little bit. And I have a big government type question. I was born in 1950. And needless to say, the government wasn't nearly as big back then. I remember it well. But back then, 5% of Americans needed a license, a government-issued permit or license to do their jobs every day. Government has gotten a little larger, and you might guess that that number's actually grown a bit. My question is, what percentage of Americans today need some kind of a license from a government to go to work?
Now, I assume that includes everything from getting a license to, like, being a CPA down to a CFP to a...
Definitely includes
Series 7. What about a CDL? Would that, like a commercial driver's license, would that be included?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay. But,
yeah. So there's a lot of government. You need a license nowadays, in some places anyway, to be a flower arranger.
You also, don't you need one to do hair and nails and, yeah.
Yeah, all of those. So needless to say, it's higher than 5%.
Yeah.
See, now you got a range, 5% to 100%, 6% to 100%.
Mm-hmm.
And it's somewhere in there.
All right.
Good question.
All
right. What else happened?
I wanted to just wrap up. I mentioned retail sales, and I said they were hotter than expected. Normally, a great sign for the economy. In this case, obviously, the opposite of what investors wanted to see. The estimate was for an increase of 2%. The actual reading came in at 3%, which showed a year over year gain of 6.4.
Now, normally,
that would be a big increase.
Yep.
But if you factor in inflation, retail sales haven't gone up at all.
Yep.
Dead even year over year. All of 100% of that is due to everyone paying more for the exact same things, which is insane.
That's special. Good morning, Chuck.
Good morning, Chuck. Hey, good morning, guys.
What's happening?
Hey, you know, with that hot CPI and PPI that came out this week, I couldn't help but reminisce about our old buddy, Senator Ernest Hollings in the late 1990s and Rush Limbaugh doing that imitation about there's too much consuming going on out there.
Foghorn Leghorn, he called him. you and I are a little older than the average person.
Yeah, that was Rush used to do that imitation. There's too much consuming going on out there.
And the second greatest line was, "Where is that bond market?" that was from Hollings. Oh, North Carolina, you've come a long ways. So what's on your mind today?
Hey, what's the ideal age to start taking Social Security? I'm 60.
Okay.
And still working. So, I plan to work for another 5 years or so, depending on whether or not I should take Social Security at early or later. I know if you work and you take Social Security, I mean, you get penalized to death, don't you?
It's only if you are under full retirement age, which for you is 67, I believe. And then also, it's not necessarily a penalty, it's a delay. So you do get at least part of that back. You know more about this than I do.
Yeah. Well, they reduce the benefit that they pay monthly. Before full retirement age, it's you get reduced by $1 for every $2 you earn over X amount. And that is then refigured at the end of the year onto your future lifetime benefit. So I would argue that it's not a good idea, because when they factor it into your lifetime benefit later on, you don't know how long you're going to live. As our good friend Stan the Annuity Man says, you have the world's best annuity. It's called Social Security. The problem with any annuity is that I will tell you exactly what your rate of return is if you will tell me what day you're going to die. And that is the only way that can be figured. So if you're pushing the benefit forward and you live past 86 or 7, you're probably going to be ultimately the winner, although that's arguable too, because of the time value of money. But if you need the money and want to file at 62, you can. But then once you file, you only have one filing date in your life. And that impacts a lot of different things later on. The rules are just so horrendously complex, it's hard to describe them all. In the real world, well, let's not go there. Let's go to the hypothetical world. In the hypothetical world, the best age to claim Social Security is 70.
Yeah. if you live, if you run any analysis that has someone living till age 95 or 100, whatever your financial planning software defaults to or whatever you set it at, and we try and go to at least 95, if not 100, depending on people's risk factors for heart attacks and things like that, the family history. But the problem is that automatically makes 70 look like the best option because you get the highest payout, and it that more than makes up for those extra years that you were taking Social Security at the lower payout. Now, there is a good chance that they will not live past their mid 80s when that is sort of the magic point where the higher value makes up for those earlier payments. So is it realistic to say for everyone 70 is the best age? Absolutely not. For a lot of people, it makes sense to take it earlier. If you're planning on retiring at 65 and you need to replace your lost income from your job, there's a good chance that will be the optimal time for you to take it.
There's another thing you should know. It's not as good as it used to be, but there's still the capability for every person to file and within 12 months unfile. That all that means is you call them and say, I've changed my mind, and you have to send them back every dollar that they've sent you, including your payments on Medicare, if any. And then they undo it, and it never happened, which means you get an 8% credit for that year. And if you don't file at the end of the first year, then you get 8% credit beyond that, too. So it's like an error correction one time in your life. And we haven't even begun to talk yet about whether or not you're married and both working. And that adds a level of complexity to the question that is, it's basically too complicated to handle on a radio call. So the real answer to your question is it's very personal.
Okay, so it would probably be worth my time in a few years to come in the office with my wife and sit down with you guys and you guys make a recommendation based on all the data, right?
Yes, I would say that it would not only be worth your time, it will be worth every penny you pay us.
Which would be nothing.
Okay.
Yeah. So, yeah. Just set up an appointment and come in, and we'll walk through all the different factors. There really is so much to consider in this question. I would put it in our top three questions we get asked in our office and run different scenarios for. It's so complicated.
And as far as coming in to talk, I would say sooner is better than later. The planning process that you're going to go through between now and whatever filing is important to get started up front so you know what you're looking at and talking about. You know, there are many good reasons to come in and just have a chat, and you might be surprised at how many of them are actually germane to your situation, especially being married. But one thing everybody should know, too, when you get cost of living increases on Social Security, you do not have to have filed to earn that money. You have to be 62. So whether or not you file at 62, all of the COLAs will apply to you along with the 8% annual increase for not filing. So you take a year like this one, if somebody's 62 and hasn't filed yet, they got 8.7 and 8, 16.7% in this year alone increase.
I just spoke with someone the other day who was worried they weren't getting the COLA because they hadn't filed, but
true.
Did all the research. I already knew the answer, but I just wanted to double check and wanted to make sure. And yeah, they you get both. You get your 1.8% for waiting plus the COLA.
Yep. It is truly one of the best questions in all of personal financial planning because it's a lot of money, a heck of a lot of money. And you want to pay as little in taxes as you can, but you want to get as much benefit as you possibly can also. So, yeah, I hope we confused you enough that you'll come in and see us and we'll try to straighten it out.
Absolutely. Thank you guys for that information.
Yeah, our pleasure.
Great question, Chuck. Thank you.
Do you want to take a shot at the shot at the trivia while you're here?
Can you repeat it?
Sure. Back in 1950, only 5% of Americans needed a license or permit by a government to go to work. What percentage is that today?
I'm going to say 1%.
No, I gave out this information. I'm going to let you try again because of this. It's higher than 5.
Okay, I'll say 7.
All right, you're too low, but you have bracketed it a little bit further, and we appreciate it.
Okay, thank you, guys.
Take care of yourself.
Thanks.
We've only got about 30 seconds left. So, Ron, I'm going to ask you to stay on the phone through the break if you can. And if you need to hang up and call back, that's fine, too. We'll put you right up there. I just don't want to press it into this little bitty time. So when we come back, we'll hit the phones again. And I've got a few things to talk about that are single points of interest and one big one. All right, we'll be right back. Don't go anywhere. This is the Vanwee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Vanwee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Vanwee.
And I'm Adam Vanwee.
And the trivia question is still out there. What percentage of Americans could not go to work without their government-issued permit or license these days? We know it's above 7%. All right. Anything else you want to hit right now? Oh, yes, a public service announcement.
Yep, I wanted to talk about our upcoming event with Joe Strong, which is a charitable organization started by a friend of ours who lost their son to cancer in 2019. And Joe was a good friend of our family. He was a friend of my son's and us. And so in order to sort of remember Joe, the family has started this charitable foundation to benefit St. Jude's, and they've raised a ton of money. The biggest event they have every year is their golf tournament at Queens Harbor. This year it's on Sunday, May 7th. It's a 12 p.m. registration, a 1 p.m. shotgun start. It is a really fun event. I played in it last year. Just tons of fun, tons of great prizes that you can win as well. They have a raffle. It's really a pretty reasonable event and pricing-wise. And also there is a early bird special. So if you sign up now, you will save some money. That goes away in another month or so. So go ahead and get on there, joestrong.org, and go to events and then register here. And it's just a great event. So it sells out. It has sold out the last 2 years. It will sell out again this year. Hope to see you all out there.
And I assume there are still whole sponsorships available?
Whole sponsorships are available. Those are $250 a hole. Those sold out last year. We did 2 per hole, and every single one sold out as well. So they raise a ton of money for St. Jude's, and this year I think will be the best year that they've had. So hope to see you there.
Well, if you look at the stats lately on charitable giving, it's not down. It's up. Despite everything that's going on.
Yeah.
Good morning, Ron.
Good morning. My name is Brian.
You just hit the other button. It's all right.
Oh,
hey, Brian.
No.
Yeah, hey. You did. It's okay. Hey, how's it going?
Good. Pretty good. We used to work together way back, if you recall.
What, you and who? Me or Adam?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, no, then I know which one it is. Adam used to work with Brian. I used to work. You're retired.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yep. How's it going?
Pretty good. I drive up to Fernandina every Saturday to visit my daughter, and it's a nice compliment to my ride out here. And anyway, I just had an answer for the trivia question.
Yes, sir.
30%.
Oh, you're a little low.
Okay.
But you have narrowed the bracket, as so many people will be happy to hear.
Okay. We tried. Well, that's good.
Yeah.
I enjoy the show. And,
I'm just thinking back on our time together. You're looking back at 2001, I believe.
That's been a while.
It has been a long time. Yeah. What's
still on the right side of the grass.
Good. But what's wrong with this picture? I'm still working and you're not.
Well, you enjoy it, and, fine. I found other things to do, so.
Good.
I bought an airplane, fly it around a little bit, so it's a lot of fun.
Oh, that is fun.
I knew you were a pilot. I remember that from the old days. So well, make sure you keep it level.
Yep, that's for sure. That's most important.
Yep.
Okay, well, I'll go. Talk to you later.
Sure, I appreciate the call. Check in again.
Thanks, Brian.
And good morning, Chris.
How are you? You all doing an excellent job. It's one of the best shows on the radio that I've heard to give good financial advice.
Well, you're very kind. Thank you.
You all go out on the limb a lot, which is appreciated, to give us a best guess. I've got two or three things I want to run by quick.
Sure.
What's your best guess on the average inflation we can look at for this year? I'm focusing on that with my real estate. I'm guessing myself about 6%. Then the second question your best guess as to who's going to be the best opponent we could get to oppose Donna Diggins. They say she's the leading candidate at 37% with some kind of a poll I heard.
That's not 50.
I know, but, I mean, she's getting up there. Who's the best one to oppose her? Because I'm looking at keeping taxes low in Jacksonville.
Mm-hmm.
And is it one of the unknowns, or is it – I keep hearing the same one. The rest of them sound pretty liberal. And some advice – I don't know who to vote for right now. I've been kicking it around between three candidates that have been on the TV all the time, and they all sound pretty liberal.
Okay. To be honest, Steve lives outside of Jacksonville, so yeah. He won't be voting in that one. I will. I haven't done my homework yet, and I haven't decided on a candidate, but when you see Donna Deegan at 37%, that's because there's a very crowded Republican field right now. That will be narrowed down for sure, and I think that I find it very unlikely that Donna gets elected. She's a raging liberal, and I just don't see that being a good fit for Jacksonville based on recent elections. However, with the way that Jacksonville does mayoral elections off cycle, you just never know what'll happen because the voter turnout's going to be low. So I promise that we will do some more research on that, and we will have some more thoughts on that at another time. I haven't done it yet.
I do have a text that you can follow up on. An alert listener just sent in that Al Ferrero does not take any PAC money. Now, I can't verify that because I don't have time right now. But if you want to look that up, that might be one consideration. But I'll bet you something right now. The 63% of non-Deegan voters are not going to split between her and someone else.
No, that's correct.
No, I don't.
I think you're looking at that. That's about the percentage of people anywhere that will only vote one party. So mm-hmm. if we were in California, there might be 30% that would vote for a Republican, but we're in Florida, so there's 30% that no matter what will vote for a Democrat. And that's just kind of how politics works.
Oh, yeah.
It's those middle, the middle 40% or so. To 20 to 40% that you really need to win over.
As Adam said, he'll keep announcing what his research is finding along the way. Let's go back to question number one. Inflation, I don't think it's going to wind up the year at 6. Do you, Adam?
I do not. That's around where it is right now. Mm-hmm. Year over year, 6.4. Yeah. It's clearly on a downtrend, although this month was a blip. But a lot of people do price increases in January, just an annualized price increase. So when you're looking at that, you start seeing that data in February. So late January and February. So I'm not surprised that we saw a tick up in inflation in January. I think February will also be a bit higher, but I do think that by summer ish, we're down 4 or below.
Yeah. I'm looking more of a return to normal. I would think it would be 3, 3.5, but I'm not going to lose any money by betting on that either.
No, I agree. But I do think that the trend is pretty clearly down at this point, and I expect that to continue throughout the year. But I don't think we'll get to that 2% range until at the very earliest late this year.
Yeah, the saddest thing about all of this is how preventable this is.
Mm-hmm.
Just start drilling for oil, building pipelines.
Stop spending stupid money.
And it's just every single thing this administration does is wrong, which continues a tradition out of the Biden family of doing that for 40-odd or 50 years. Just whatever their instincts are, if we did the opposite, this country would be right back on track. That is my opinion, not necessarily shared by the management here. So, best we can do.
Thank you so much.
Well, do you want to take a quick shot at the trivia before you go?
32%.
Well, you know what? It's 33 plus or minus 1, and 32 is right there, and that makes you a winner.
Oh, awesome.
I'm going to put you on hold, and we'll get your name and address, and Mr. Bales will send you a little something fun. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thanks for calling. How about that? See how that's the value that the early callers have in setting that bracket for people. It can produce winners. So thanks again to Brian for being close but not quite a cigar. All right, we're going to take one more break and come back. And I've got a few little things, but I want to talk about a concept that I have developed that I think you'd be interested in, and it affects the politics today. So don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And we have had a winner. I just wanted to comment on that. In my lifetime, we went from 3% of the people needing, 5% of the people needing a license of some sort from the government to 33%. And it marches on.
It never goes the other way.
It never does.
It always goes that way. And it's really just a tax. That's all it is. They do it in the name of, quote unquote, safety, protecting the consumer, but it's just a tax.
Yeah, exactly right.
There was one thing before you start. There's one thing I want to talk about, the retail sales.
Uh-huh.
Bars and restaurants increased 7.2% month over month.
We know what you guys are doing.
Year over year, that's 25.2%. increase in bar and restaurant sales. So part of that is inflation, but not all of it.
No.
I think that I think a lot of it comes from blue states that have been locked down for 2 years, and there is pent up demand, and they're finally being allowed to go to bars and restaurants.
I think you're right.
And they are doing it.
Mm-hmm.
So that was just one note that I thought was pretty funny. But that's such a huge increase, 25.2% year over year. The other small thing that I think might be contributing is that the grocery store is so expensive these days.
No kidding.
Why not go to a restaurant?
Yeah.
Especially if you're a single person, it's almost the same price to go to Publix and get a meal as it is to go to a restaurant and get it served to you.
And then in a related subject, this administration now wants to clamp down on servers and such.
Oh, yeah.
Who get a lot of tips because – my goodness, they must not be reporting their income.
And they're all billionaires, right? They're all making over $400,000 a year.
Absolutely. It's so true. Good morning, Mike.
Hey, good morning, guys.
What's happening?
Not much. Very quick question.
Sure.
Very quick. What is meant exactly when they use the term Fed put?
They're betting on interest rates, and they're betting on the market reaction to it. So if you're selling or buying puts, it means you're on one side or the other if you're selling or buying calls. But lately, the puts are outweighing the calls. And if you think of an option this way, a put means if I own the put, so I'm buying one, not selling one, then I am buying the right to put it to you at a certain price, meaning I think the market will go down. And that's what people are thinking now. The Fed's going to raise a quarter or maybe even a half in March, and that's going to cause the market to go down. So if you're buying puts on the market, it means it's a Fed put to you. You're banking on the market reaction to what you're pretty sure the Fed's going to do. So it's one of those crazy option strategies that might or might not work, but you could almost say that about any option strategy.
Right. I kind of understand options, but I always wondered what is meant by the Fed put.
That's betting on the direction of the market. So you buy the market index future, and you by getting the put, it means you get the ability to make someone buy that put, basically buy the market index at a certain level that you're betting will be higher when you exercise a put.
Right. So when they're talking about the Federal, with Powell and the Federal Reserve,
mm-hmm.
and they talk about the Fed put,
so
they're saying that the Fed is going to
raise rates.
No, actually, I just looked it up. I've heard that term, but only rarely. What they're referring to in this case is the belief that that the Fed will step in and stop the carnage if the markets fall too far.
Okay.
That's... So yeah, that's what the Fed put is, I guess, according to this website that I found.
I appreciate that. And to stop the carnage, it means that they'll start considering lowering rates?
Yes, and you've seen that throughout history. So we saw it most recently with the COVID crash, where they dropped rates dramatically when the market went into the free fall.
Yeah, very good.
There okay. is there is a group of people out of the White House that call themselves the market crash prevention team or something like that, where if things start going down just so far, they'll start buying. And it's all very clandestine. I don't get involved in it any more than I would ever get involved in crypto. It's just flat out over my head.
The very good. The one thing it says, it's not the Fed's policy, but it has been done. So it's not, they don't have to do it's that.
Simple. You're betting on the bad market one way or the other.
So when they talk about the Fed put, they're talking about in case, like you said, the stock market crashes, they'll intervene in some manner.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Very good.
And it can be trading curbs too, which
thank
slows
you.
It down.
Thank you for clearing that up. Have a great weekend, Jason.
Yeah, thanks for the call.
All right. You've all heard about the term taxation without representation. That was pretty much one of the reasons this country was founded the way it was. And then a wise person came in one day, and this is sort of an aside, and said, if you think taxation without representation is bad, wait till you see it with representation, which, of course, has proven true for decades now. But I have a little different look at things, and I call it taxation without monetization. Now, what does that mean? Everybody knows out there that there's a real uncomfortable feeling you get when you get an unexpected bill, which could be you need new tires or your air conditioning breaks and it's a Florida summer day, and you don't really have the cash flow for doing that and how uncomfortable it is. But when it happens with taxes, it seems to be even a bit more disgusting and sometimes preventable. For instance, one of the problems people run into is they'll go over to the gig income or they'll work a one-time thing and they get a 1099 and they didn't realize how much they're going to owe in taxes on that money, which begins with 15.3% just for the FICA and Medicare. And then there's the income tax on top of that. And a lot of people don't adequately prepare for that. So when their tax bill comes due in April, they have no money from it left anymore. But in that case, it's not the government's fault. It is their fault. Now, there's another concept called imputed income, and that can go a couple different ways. Your paycheck might have some W-2 things on it, like use of a company car or certain premiums for insurance. That, again, you should be able to plan that out and increase your withholding on the rest of it to cover it. But once in a while, something happens that you don't really have the control over. The worst case that I remember that didn't happen, if you remember Bill Clinton wanting to impute the income that homeowners would pay if they were paying rent to a landlord on an equivalent property. That would be something tacked on to your taxable income at the end for which you had no cash flow, because your cash flow is going into owning the property. That would truly be taxation without monetization. Well, it came up again this basic week, actually. Some of you have probably heard of the company called Celsius. Celsius filed bankruptcy. They were what is called a crypto trader. And needless to say, you all know us well enough that we don't speak crypto much around our office. But some people do, and we tell them if they want to do it, if our clients want to do it, fine, do it on the side. Don't tell us. What happened with them, with Celsius, was they declared bankruptcy. And what they were doing, they were borrowing. You open an account and put crypto in it there, and they were loaning that money to people at high interest rates, and then they were paying some subset of that high interest rate to the people who had their accounts with Celsius. Well, when Celsius went under, all of that was frozen. Now, what happens when the company doesn't pay its interest payments, they don't go away. They owe you, and they will 1099 you, and you have no money. Oh, and by the way, the interest payments that you were going to get from your account at Celsius, guess how they were going to be paid? Crypto. Now, what would possess somebody, and I have his name here, but I won't embarrass him because he won't be listening anyway, but somebody went out and mortgaged his house, $125,000, and put the account at Celsius, and he got an $8,000 1099, and he can't pay it because he doesn't even have enough money to pay his mortgages. And then there was another one. This one, his name was Doug Stringer, who lost about $2.5 million. And in his own words, "I put all my eggs in one basket and I'm wiped out." My comment to that was, he'd have done much better investing in eggs. We all know what happened there. So if you're thinking you might want to be one of those big hitter players in the crypto world, don't come whining to us. That's all I can say.
Not our thing.
No. Well, this was fun. It went very quickly. Thanks to all the callers. And we will see you at the same time next week. Who knows what will happen? Maybe we'll shoot down some more $12 balloons or something just for fun. He's laughing. See you next week. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour.